Yeah, I think so. I was hearing crackling and creaking yesterday, and I couldn't tell what it was, but is it just the architecture? It's kind of weird, right? It's a cool space, though.
It's such a cool space. I
Yeah.
think probably a little nicer than Van.
Probably a little. Although I like kind
It
of
was con it was a
cozy.
little more contained.
I like cozy. Maybe someone is, because that's awfully creaky.
Or maybe the raindrops.
Are these all set?
Yeah.
Okay.
Though I don't know if we need microphones.
I know, do we need them
I don't think
if
so.
this is going to be recording anyway, right? Are we ready? You want to give it another minute or?
We're ready.
We're ready? Okay. We'll begin with the invocation. Toward the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance.
Let's take a moment to arrive in this space together and feel where we are on the planet. The travels that got us here. Feeling of this space itself. And of those sitting around us. Although some of us know each other, some of us don't, so maybe we can start by going around and everyone just saying your name, or if there's anything else that you would like to say to introduce yourself. My name is Mirza, and we have traveled from just north of San Francisco to be here, teaching every afternoon. And I'm so happy that you've joined us this afternoon.
My name is Lucas. Just came from Eugene. Just came from Eugene.
My name is Nuria. I live here in Portland.
I'm Shirley, and I came from Vancouver.
I'm Dorothy from Seattle.
I'm Kalita from Bellingham, Washington, by the Canadian border.
I'm Sharif. in Seattle.
I'm Tasneem, and I'm from Portland.
I'm Nancy.
I'm Tajeli, and I live in Boston.
Where's that?
Tajeli, and I live in Boston.
Boston.
I'm Satya. I live with him.
Well, this afternoon we wanted to discuss the subject of love. And love is the essence of the Sufi work. Love is the basis of every state of being. And love is the threshold, the doorway by which we enter into every state of being. And all love comes from the same divine source. But just as light passes through a prism and takes on all of the different colors, so too we have many, many different forms of love. And in Sufism, there are many different terms for different types of love. Welcome. So one form of love is ishq, which is a passion. And it's an inspiration, and it's like fire. Maybe you have experienced this in your own life. And it's a love in which the lover is destroyed in the face of the beloved. It destroys the false self, but it can be very destructive and difficult. Another form of love is hubb, which is an affection that is very generative and sustaining. It unites the lover and the beloved. It grows the self. It's a love that makes you become more of yourself. And so love can do all of these different things. It can destroy or create. It can bring beings together or apart. And we see in our own human lives, our own life cycle, that love is the energy that drives our entire lives. So it's romantic love that draws two people together to have children. It's the love of the parents that helps the children grow and protects them and guides them, nurtures them as they grow. Maybe you've seen our two sons running around, and they're 6 and 3, and they need so much attention that if I didn't love them, it'd be very difficult to work 24 hours a day to take care of them. And then a child sees his or her parents for the first time. The parents are the first face of love that a child sees. And so the parents are the first form of God, the first model for what God looks like. If you have parents that are very loving and nurturing. You're already building a model of God as a loving and nurturing force. If you have parents that are distant, you're already building a model of God as a distant. And then the children's love for the parents takes on other forms. It becomes the love of a teacher, a mentor, or a guide, who becomes another model for the divine. And all of these forms lead back to the divine love itself. And so all of the human experiences of love are part of this cycle, constantly leading us back to the divine. And of course, the divine, in turn, is loving us in many different forms. On our first morning here at the program, Pier Zia was talking about the experience of being in the womb and the love of being held and enveloped in this warm, compassionate womb. And he reminded us that the two great names of God, Rahman and Rahim, both come from the Arabic Rahma, which refers to the womb. And so the first image of God's love for us is of a womb, completely protecting and enveloping and holding and sustaining and nurturing, giving us everything that we need to grow and evolve and change, and holding whatever we are and whatever we become in perfect love. And we have these two different forms of the name, Rahman and Rahim. And the Sufis teach us that there are some differences in those two and in the love that they represent. Rahman is a unconditional love, a love for everyone and everything, a love that is woven into the very structure of the universe, a love that is the same as reality itself, a love that you can never get away from, even if you tried, no matter how far you go or what you do, a love that is equally for all people of all religions and backgrounds, but equally for all animals and plants, for every cell, for every atom. It's an undifferentiated, unconditional love that is the universe itself, that is the source of all other love in the universe. Take a moment to feel, if you can feel that love, or if you can't, if there's some barrier separating you from that feeling. The second form of love is Rahim. And Rahim is the love that God has for those that love God. So it's a relationship. It's a relationship of two modes of consciousness, two modes of being. Could even say two personalities. So it is when the personality that is you has decided to love God and to form a relationship, and there is a love that is in return. And this is the form of God that so many of us have difficulty finding. And our difficulties come from all different sources. And maybe it was that our early models didn't provide this, that our parents were distant, that our guides were not there. That at some point in our lives we felt alone. Felt alone in a way that we have never recovered from. And we'll always have some doubt. Is there really a God? Do I have any way of being in a relationship with that God? If I went and knelt down at this altar and cried out, "Answer me," am I going to hear a response back? If I start making mistakes and bad decisions in my life, is God going to come down and save me and steer me back to the right path? And so we have this longing to be loved by God, but also this fear and doubt and resistance, and that's what makes Rahim so much more complicated. Yesterday in the afternoon, we were talking about the longing in the line of Murshid, "Take us in thy parental arms." This calling to the divine, take us, raise us up, hold us. So we feel that feeling of being in the womb, which, how many of us feel that every minute? How many of us feel that every day? This cry, take us in thy parental arms. There's a surprising moment in the Gospels where Christ says to his disciple, "Do you love me?" And his disciple says, "Oh, of course I do, teacher." And he asks again, "Do you love me?" And the disciple thinks about it and says, I'm trying to do good deeds and remember you. And he asks a third time, "Do you love me?" And that's what we forget. We are in the midst of our own longing for God, our own question of, "Do you love me?" that we don't hear God's question to us. "Do you love me?" We don't hear God's voice calling to us, "Do you love me?" It's a poem of the Sufi Ibn Arabi where he speaks from the perspective of God. From the perspective of God talking to the human heart. "Hear, O my beloved, you are the reason for the being of the world. You are the center point of the sphere and its encompassing. You are its complexity and simplicity. You are the order brought down between heaven and earth. I did not create for you realizations, except that you realize me in them. And when you realize me, you realize yourself. Beloved, how often have I called you and you do not hear? How often have I stood before you and you do not recognize me? How often have I embodied myself in scents and you do not inhale, and in the flavors and you do not savor the taste for my sake? What is the matter with you that you do not feel me when you touch? Why do you not recognize me in the fragrances of musk? Why do you not see me? Why do you not hear me? What is the matter with you? I am your most heady rapture beyond any delight. My craving for you is more intense than any born for an object of desire. I am better for you than any good thing. I am the beautiful. I am the elegant. Love me, love me, love me alone. Desire me ardently. Be consumed in me, not engrossed in other than me. Take me in, receive me. You will never find an intimate like me. Everything wants you for itself, but I want you for your sake. But you avoid me. Beloved, I am closer to you than yourself. I am jealous of you from you. I cannot bear to see you in otherness. Be with me in me. Be with me with yourself, just as you are with me. Beloved, come hand in hand. Enter reality, that it may unite us for eternity. O heart. There's a story of creation when God had created all of the beauty of the light and the darkness and all of the different spheres and all of the different orders of being, from the tiniest insect all through the web of life, all of the different creatures to the human, and all in perfect harmony and beauty. And he brought all of the angels to come and adore this creation. And all of the angels adored this creation and adored the human heart, except the one angel, Iblis, that we sometimes call Satan. And so this angel, for refusing to bow down before Adam, was sent down to the furthest abyss, the darkest place, the place furthest away from God. And yet in the Sufi tradition, he was a monotheist, because he would only worship God. He would only be oriented towards the ultimate unity and would not adore the multiplicity of creation, even as beautiful as it is. And even from this furthest place, he is still facing and adoring God. It's like in the solar system, there's the sun, which is the most concentrated place of light that all the other rays of light are emanating out of, forming the solar system. And then there's the outer edge of the solar system, which is called the heliosphere, the furthest extension of the sun's influence. And so Iblis is placed at the heliosphere, at the furthest edge of God's love. But by being so far away, he defines how grand God's love is, how far it extends into every place. There's another story in the Buddhist tradition of a bodhisattva who has placed herself in the lowest level of hell, in the darkest abyss. And she has decided to not leave until everyone else makes it out first. there's that love that permeates everywhere, even to the place that we are most, feel most alone, even to the place where we feel furthest away from love, furthest away from God, there is still that love there. And in fact, it's that longing for God that is God's love inside of us. That is God's presence inside of us. And so, what do we do when we feel that we're disconnected from love? Do we look for love in another person? Do we form a model of God to call out to? Or do we turn inward to the very inner core of our being? Love makes us want to go out and find the beloved, to hold the beloved, to become the beloved. But how can we sit with the feeling of longing? How can we let it do its work inside of us? That was a question that a young poet who was studying with Rilke asked him, and he wrote back some advice that I'll share with you and I think end there. The poet asked Rilke, "What do I do with all of this love and longing I feel?" "It is good to love, because love is difficult. For one human being to love another, that is perhaps the most difficult task that has been entrusted to us, the ultimate task, the final test and proof, the work for which all other work is merely preparation. That is why young people, who are beginners in everything, are not yet capable of love. It is something we must learn with our whole being, with all our forces gathered around our solitary, anxious, upward-beating hearts. We must learn to love. But learning time is always a long, secluded time. And therefore, loving for a long time ahead and far into life is solitude, a heightened and deepened kind of aloneness for the person who loves. Loving does not at first mean merging, surrendering, and uniting with another. For what would a union of two people who are unclarified, unfinished, and still incoherent? Love is a high inducement for the individual to ripen, to become something in himself, to become a world, to become a world in himself for the sake of another. It is a great demanding claim on him, something that chooses him and calls him to the vast distances. Only in this sense, as the task of working on themselves, to hearken and to hammer day and night, may young people use the love that is given to them. Merging and surrendering and every kind of communion is not for them, who must still, for a long, long time, save and gather themselves. It is the ultimate. It is perhaps that for which human lives are as yet barely large enough. Sit here, I think on all the different things I've said about love and all of the different shades and colors of union and aloneness, of compassion and holding, and of distance and longing. All of the different forms of love. And each one is a form of that original divine love, and each one is a way back. And so let's take a moment to find whatever is the feeling, without any judgment, what is the feeling that emerges in your heart as you let the word love echo inside of you?
So I was doing some reading in Murshid's books about love to prepare for this class, and So many of my fundamental questions about love are related to themes that Mirza was addressing. And I was thinking about how in person-to-person interactions that I've had, my own love relationships with my family and with other people, they kind of go on this journey, and things may be wonderful for a time, and then things may be complicated or distant or difficult, and then perhaps the relationship dissolves, or in the case of a parental relationship, you kind of like move away, or you know, humans kind of have ways of coming together and coming apart in our own lives. We can put distance where distance is needed, and we can be close when closeness is wanted. And for me, a love relationship with God is so much more complicated, because it's something that one wants and yet one can never get away from at the same time. And so there's no escaping the kind of complicated dynamics that can come up in a love relationship with the divine. And so I always want to know, you know, how does one be in that? How can you reconcile, you know, feeling distant from God when it's not the same thing as being distant from a person? So I found this little passage from Murshid when this is his talk on love, human and divine. Often it happens that lovers grow cold just from lack of understanding that love must not be for an external ideal, but that the lover has to prepare the ideal in himself or herself. They have failed to make the self-sufficient love within themselves. Not so the sages, the holy men, the wise ones. They know that a person who is kind today can be the contrary tomorrow. Therefore, the wise lover expects both opposites in the external and inner beauty of the beloved. Those who have developed the ideal love within themselves by the aid of an object to love transform their nature into a more and more loving one in time. Their love for a certain person is akin to learning the ABC, for by learning the ABC, one comes to be able to read not only the primer, but any book. By learning to love one, we gain a light, a torch, by the light of which we can read all things in life. It is as if in our nature, we have developed something that we can give to everyone. So there's often this idea when one grapples with a relationship with God that, you know, you're asking God, do you love me? Do you love me? Where's my sign? Where are my, you know, feelings of being held in the womb-like environment? And, you know, meanwhile, God is asking, do you love me? Do you love me? And it's these two things trying to find each other. And in fact, it's not so you know, external one from the other, but that if one just turns to one's own child and loves them, or if one turns to a friend and loves them, or a spouse or a stranger, that all of those forms of love are just the engine that generates more and more and more. And that's how those two expressions of love can find each other. So by increasing your own capacity for love in whatever small way you can muster in your day-to-day life, or in as large a capacity as you can handle, that is increasing God's very own capacity to love and to be loved. And then I also love to love. You know, I find reframing the question to be so helpful because I'm personally really into Stoic philosophy, and so in Stoicism, it's never the situation itself that's the problem. What complicates things is our own kind of internal narrative about it, or our own judgments about things. So sometimes just a little shift from seeing something as a difficult situation or as a problem can be kind of helped along by just looking at that kind of as if it's kind of not happening so much to our own stories. So this is another little passage from A Field Guide to Getting Lost, which I read from a little bit yesterday by Rebecca Solnit. We treat desire as a problem to be solved, address what desire is for, and focus on that something and how to acquire it, rather than on the nature and the sensation of desire, though often it is the distance between us and the object of desire that fills the space in between with the blue of longing. I wonder sometimes whether, with a slight adjustment of perspective, it could be cherished as a sensation on its own terms. Since it is as inherent to the human condition as blue is to distance. If you can look across the distance without wanting to close it up, if you can own your longing in the same way that you own the beauty of that blue that can never be possessed. For something of this longing will, like the blue of distance, only be relocated, not assuaged by acquisition and arrival, just as the mountains cease to be blue when you arrive among them, and the blue instead tints the next beyond. Somewhere in this is the mystery of why tragedies are more beautiful than comedies, and why we take a huge pleasure in the sadness of certain songs and stories. Something is always far away. The mystic Simone Weil wrote to a friend on another continent, "Let us love this distance, which is thoroughly woven with friendship, since those who do not love each other are not separated. Love is the atmosphere that fills and colors the distance between herself and her friend. Even when that friend arrives on the doorstep, something remains impossibly remote. When you step forward to embrace them, your arms are wrapped around mystery, around the unknowable, around that which cannot be possessed. The far seeps in even to the nearest. After all, we hardly know our own depths." And when I read this, I was like, damn. Because that's so true. Like, you know, we ourselves are always changing, and the people we love are changing, and the things we love are changing, and our love relationships about those things change. And so it's kind of a futile pursuit in a way. You just have to give all that up because, you know, what does it mean to really love another person? Do you have to really know them truly first? Do you have to know yourself? And, you know, if you get the hang of that, I mean, what does it mean to love God? How can one ever really know God enough to love God? So just experiencing that maybe it's not so much a problem, and maybe just the feeling of longing is kind of the answer in and of itself. Just kind of an appreciation. And lots of, you know, Sufi love poetry kind of goes along those lines. So we're going to take a short time to do a practice, and then we'll have a little time to share. But we're going to do a little bit of Rahman and Rahim, kind of going into those words. And before I go into a practice, I think it's good to kind of check in about how one enters into that practice, how one enters into the recitation of holy names, divine names, because these names can be a number of things. They can be a cry, you know, Rahman, like the cry of the heart for what it longs to receive in return. It could be a prayer, kind of a sacred naming and appreciating that holy aspect of God. It could be like a eureka, like the thing you say when you've found and discovered that quality, like, love is here. And similarly with the names, as Pierre Zia was speaking about this morning, they their sounds and incantations are kind of these vibrations that affect our subtle centers. So when we say Rahman, we have the ah in the chest, and it's almost like two strikes of a gong kind of reverberating in one's body. And when we have Rahim, we have the ah and the e, and that transition from low to high and coming up the e, was the e at the top of the head? Somewhere up there. You'll feel it when you say the sounds. So I think it's important to bring one's whole self to saying the words and try not to just mumble along or be concerned with, you know, how it sounds in the space. This is kind of a weird, echoey space. So what we'll do is close our eyes first and just find a little comfortable position. You don't have to be too upright. Just be comfortable. And first we'll breathe. And just take a moment to sense into how you will approach Rahman and Rahim. How will you approach these aspects of endless, compassionate love, endless, unconditional love and holding? And then the love that's relational, perhaps complicated, involving kind of a call and response with God or some kind of interaction where you find that quality of Rahim. So first we'll say together, Ya Rahman, 11 times, slowly. Ya Rahman, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahman. Ya Rahman, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahman. And now we'll say Ya Rahim 11 times slowly. Ya Rahim. 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 And now placing this practice on your breath silently. Exhaling Rahman, inhaling Rahim. 11 times on your own. And now letting the words fall away and just sensing into the reverberation of those names. Sensing and seeing what's revealed. Even if just a little fragrance of something. Amin. So I wanted to have a little longer than we had yesterday just to hear people's experiences. I'd love to know what your experience is with your own love relationship with God or anything that came up with this practice or anything from any session at all, just to hear each other's voices and get a sense of each other's experience.
difference between loving someone and being in love with someone. In my experience, it's something quite different, but I can't put it in words.
You want to take that one?
Yesterday we spoke a little bit about these two states within the Sufi path, the maqam and the hal, and the you know, the maqam is a state of being that you get into through work, through you know, if you have a practice that you get up every morning and do, and maybe you don't always like it, but you get up and do it anyway, and day by day it works its effect on you. It's like winding the clock. Or you might have a practice that's the maqam, because it creates a state. Creates a state that is constant. You can get there anytime you want, and is progressive. It's a state that leads to the next state. And then this is all the Sufi terminology. And the hal is the state that comes. Maybe you do a practice that creates like a great ecstasy, but it doesn't mean that you'll get the same effect from it the next time. And it doesn't mean that you'll feel that way the next day. And you can't necessarily get that feeling at will. So it sort of comes to you by grace. Yesterday we used the term weather. It's like weather that that comes and goes and can be very powerful. Versus a state that that you have achieved through some sort of deliberative process that gives you control over it. And I would say that's something of the difference of loving and being in love, the maqam and the hal. Another way of talking about it might be whether the experience is inside of you or whether you are inside of the experience. So, you know, being in love, it's like you are inside of the experience. You have no control there. And it's the powerful weather of love blows you one way or another, and you're at its mercy. And you are not, you almost don't have free will. You're swept along. Whereas the other form of love is perhaps an experience that's inside of you that is more deliberate and purposeful, and you remain. I'm not saying one of these is better than the other.
I have an opinion.
But you remain yourself, and so you love in a way that is more conscious.
I think there's something really beautiful about just doing like the work of love, like especially. You know, in the context of divine love, I could never really personally relate to kind of like the goo-goo-eyed love poetry of the Sufis, because that was never really my own personal experience. But I relate very deeply, maybe just because of my personality, with, you know, you just put your head down and you change the dirty diapers and you feed the hungry mouths and you show up every day even when it's hard, and it's not all about, you know, beauty and romance, but there's something very precious to me about, you know, knowing that you are have done your love duty.
But for in love, for me, the special quality of that is that the will is not involved. You can't will to be in love with someone or to not be in love with someone. Mm-hmm.
This is a great question for our group. Maybe everyone can turn to their neighbor and say something about what is the difference between love and being in love, and is one preferable to the other? if you're daring enough to turn to your neighbors and talk to them for a moment.
We have 10 minutes.
Uncharted territory there.
How long do we have?
We go till 3:15, so maybe we can give people a few minutes and then have people share in the group.
Do you want to call them?
So maybe we can just take a minute and finish our conversations, and then we'll share as a group. So I'd love to hear if anyone would like to share with the larger group anything from your conversations or anything from today. How are we feeling about love? Mm-hmm. Yay, nay.
Better than the
Yeah, go ahead.
Something that it's not something that it's more like the grace waves.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not something you ask for, but you're in the present and you're receiving it,
mm-hmm.
and you're receptive to it, and you're doing your practice as well.
Yeah.
So it's all building up to something, and
yes.
you could rely on that even when you should be doing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I know what you mean, yeah. There's a nice Persian Sufi proverb that it says, no one ever caught a gazelle while hunting a gazelle, but no one who's never hunted has ever caught a gazelle. Sort of hard to wrap your mind around. But it's that you have to go out seeking. And then what you're seeking will come and seek you. And so you have to go out and try and put yourself in that place where you yourself can then be found.
Rumi has a poem in which he gives advice on attracting a lover. And he says, be the prey, not the hunter.
At some point, I went, one thing leads to another, and at some point I started connecting more with the energy coming through the sun, and I noticed when I'm like, thank you so much, you know, there's this definite conscious thing with the sun, and it actually gets brighter when I'm paying attention to it. I love that. It'll be like going down. Like, oh yeah, thank you for your energy. Oh my God, you know, we didn't exist. And who are you anyway? Yeah. It goes, well, I don't know. But it's happened so many times.
Anyone else?
Well, the concept of the model of that you get as a child determines your model of God really helps. I mean, it's like they're quick because my parents were really distant. And so obviously I've had trouble with finding a really close relationship with God.
I think you're not alone. Yeah. All right, so we'll close with the prayer for the universal. O thou who art the maker, molder, and builder of the universe, build with thine own hands the universal, our temple for thy divine message of love, harmony, and beauty. Amen. Thank you all. Enjoy your afternoon.